tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go. Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm Kristen Petrie, the podcast's technical tabby. I'm just popping in to let you know that this is part two of a special audio presentation of the webinar, The Drop Trap, A Trapper's Best Friend, that was given earlier this year by Brian Cortis and Susie Richmond from Neighborhood Cats. If you haven't listened to part one yet, you'll probably want to go back and listen to last week's episode before you start this one. But, you know, you do you. In today's episode, we're wading into the advanced side of drop trapping techniques. Brian's going to explain how an innovative tool was designed to automate the trapping process. It's very cool. Makes it a lot easier to catch multiple cats at once, which is a crucial development, especially during large-scale mass trapping projects. He also takes you behind the scenes of Neighborhood Cats' recent efforts during the Maui wildfires, where they used all of these techniques to rescue hundreds of cats in really unpredictable and harsh environments. You'll hear about the unique challenges they faced, from uneven terrain to frightened, hard-to-reach cats, and how they adapted their strategies to meet the needs of a disaster zone, which is, of course, a very unique perspective. You're going to get a wealth of practical advice, from adjusting your trapping techniques to difficult environments to scaling up rescue efforts in emergency situations. And this is all using the drop trap as part of that arsenal of tools. If you want to see the whole presentation with all the visuals and videos, and trust me, you do, in addition to being great trappers, Brian and Susie are really talented photographers as well. You can find it in our Everything TNR YouTube playlist. Just go to communitycatspodcast.com/TNR-playlist, and you can watch it in its entirety there. Next week, Stacey LeBaron will be back in the driver's seat, and you guys will be getting back to our regular chats with guests from around the animal welfare world, so look forward to that. And right now, thank you for turning your passion for cats into action, and enjoy part two of The Drop Trap, A Trapper's Best Friend.
So nighttime trapping, it's definitely possible. And what we do is just hang lights, and you can use a variety of different lights. But the idea is that you don't need to see everything around the trap. You need to see where the food bowl is, because if the kitties are walking around, it's interesting to note that, and it could be helpful for getting ready. But the moment of truth is when they're in the trap and their head is in the bowl. So you need to be able to see that clearly. Now, that said, our experience, Susie's and mine, is that most cats are not bothered by lighting. So we will often use the headlamps of the car. We haven't noticed that makes the cats any more wary. But if you are concerned about that, and because every now and then there probably is a cat who doesn't like headlights, then just keep the lighting to a minimum. Or if you're trapping in a spot, obviously, where you can't park a car, then you need to use something like this. And here's a tip from Helen Woods of Laurel Cats. She uses a clip light with an extension cord and an inverter called an adapter, which allows the cord to be plugged into the car and work off the battery. But you want to make sure you don't run out your battery, maybe leave the engine on. So just make sure it's bright enough for you to be able to identify your cat and also to tell if they're ear tipped or not. That's where binoculars can be very handy. You may need to use what's called a drop trap transfer opening reducer. We call it an adapter for short. And basically, the Tomahawk drop trap is built to line up with the rear door of a trap that measures 10 by 12, 10 inches by 12 inches. The traps that we use a lot of now, like we use the GT606, we like gravity traps more than spring clip traps. And there's also the TrueCatch 30 LTD is another very popular gravity trap that's on the market. They have openings that are 9 inches by 11 inches. So when you push them up against the side door to do a transfer, there's a little bit of a gap on either side of the box trap door. That can be a real problem if you're dealing with kittens. And even as old as 6-7 months, we've seen them squeeze through those 1-inch openings and get out. So you can eliminate that risk by inserting one of these adapters. They go behind the tracks of the side door, and you just zip tie them on, and you can see it makes the opening smaller. So we just have them on there as a standard part of the trap. And they're not very expensive. And if you don't have one and you're using traps besides the larger spring clip ones, I highly recommend you just zip tie it on there and leave it on there for good. And here's how you insert them. So showing you, you take the adapter, you put it behind the side door tracks, and then you just zip tie them on. Just test after you've attached it to make sure that the side door can still slide up and down easily without any type of interference. So let's talk about remote controls. So basically, the remote control set consists of these parts. You have the trigger, which is that black box that's sitting on top of the trap, and it sends out a little steel dowel looking object. And then there's a prop stick, not the usual one that you would use with a string, but a special one that holds up the trap when the trigger is set. So the trigger set when the little cylinder is sticking out. And when you press the remote control trigger, it causes that cylinder to retract and go back into the box, and then the trap drops. A lot of people love the remote controls. It eliminates the string. It physically makes the trapping go quite a bit easier. However, there are definitely certain problems with remote controls. And I'm going to show you, this is a cat. This is like one of the last cats in this 30 cat colony that we were after. And we set up remote control. You can see that the long prop stick and the trigger mechanism up mounted on top of the drop trap. We were patient. We waited. He was all the way under. He had his head, his mouth in the bowl. And then we pulled the remote control, and yet he got out. So let's take a look at this one more time in slow motion. Okay, did you notice that he started moving before the trap started falling? And that's what's captured in this slide. See, the trap is still all the way up. The trigger is still holding up on the prop stick there, and he's on the move. So what happened is that you're standing however far away, 100 feet away, and you've got your trigger in hand. You wait for the moment of truth. You press the trigger. The motor in the remote unit makes noise before the cylinder starts to move. And again, we're talking split seconds here. But that noise alerted him that something was wrong. And he just reacted instantly. So you could see he's well on the move before the trap is dropping. And that's why he got out. And that's why we don't use remote controls in this manner. Because most cats, it'll be fine. But these really tough, very wary cats, we're not the only ones who've lost them because of the noise that the unit makes just before it moves. So how do you get around that? Because, we like remote controls, the idea of them. This is what we do and what a number of other trappers do these days, which is we use the remote control on the side door instead of using it to replace the string and the prop stick. And in order to do this, if you have a remote control, you're going to need a special bracket to hold the trigger unit on top of the side door. And it's not an expensive item, but you can't do it without it. So you would go to Tomahawk Live Trap and then get this piece of equipment. So that, in our experience, is the best way to use a remote control because the door drops very quickly and the cats are pretty comfortable going in. And if they're not at first, they're pretty easy to train to go in. And you eliminate the door drop so fast and the opening being much smaller than the drop trap is propped up on a stick. Even if they can hear that motor, there's not nearly enough time for them to get out. So if you're going to use a remote control, this is the manner that we recommend that you use it. And I want to use that to tie into one of our recent experiences at Neighborhood Cats, which is the Maui wildfire. Those of you, I'm sure everybody's probably heard about this, but this was last August in 2023, and there was quite a horrific fire that burnt down the entire old town part of Lahaina in Hawaii. It burnt down 5.5 square miles, or about 100 people that died, a few thousand houses and buildings were burnt to the ground. And the animal rescue part of the operation was delayed by over 2 weeks. And the rationale for that was that the authorities, the emergency authorities, thought that it was such a bad fire that animals could not possibly have survived. Well, they were quite wrong. It turned out there were over 600 cats who still remained in the burn zone. And we were assigned the task of lead on September 2nd to get these cats out. So the shelter was overwhelmed. There had been an initial rescue effort led by people with a lot of disaster experience right after August 24th when they were first let in, and they grabbed about, I think it was 89 cats, and they brought them to what was already a very overcrowded shelter that was getting more and more overcrowded as fire victims were surrendering pets or people were moving and animals were coming in. So there was not capacity to take in hundreds of more cats. And we had to set up a system that we called shelter in place, where we took care of the cats in the burn zone and trapped them as there was capacity in the system to take them in. So the way we managed that was by setting up these feeding stations. We had over 80 of them. And every day they were provided with fresh food and water. We used storage bins with openings cut out in the long side in the front. So the cats got very used to going into these bins in order to eat. So the first 80% of the cats, this is over the course of about 4 to 5 months, we were able to trap them using normal box traps. And remember, we weren't trying to catch them all at the same time. We were prioritizing the ones that were injured, the ones that were identified pets. Those were the ones we were trying to get out real quickly. And the community cats, we were maintaining where they were and slowly bringing them in as the shelter got more and more space. So we just did your normal trapping techniques, which was box traps. Obviously, we had good control for a while anyway over the food. So we were able to withhold it and get them to be hungry. We would put the traps near the stations. Almost all the trapping took place at night. And this was fine until we got down to the last 20% or so of the cats. And then they stopped going into the box traps. And there were a number of reasons for that. A lot of these cats had already been trapped, fixed, and ear-tipped. More and more people moving into the disaster zone. You know, I'd say for the first 2 or 3 months, we were pretty much some of the only people in there. But as debris removal and putting up rebuilding utilities and things like that, there were more and more people coming in. And I think human beings have some type of genetic trait where when they see a cat outside, they have to put down a can of food. So it became really hard to get them hungry. And even if they were hungry, they wouldn't go in. We even tried drastic things like we would not feed them for 2 or 3 nights in a row, and they still would not go into the trap. So what we did is we swapped all of the storage bins for drop traps, and we were down to about 30 stations, feeding stations, because as we were bringing cats out, we were trying to consolidate the ones that were left. So 80 feeding stations over time was reduced to 30. So all 30 feeding stations became the drop trap down on the ground with a corrugated plastic roof on top. Now, it turns out this is a good tip for advanced drop trapping. The roof made a huge difference. We see it all the time now. The cats love the space. They like being in the space because it's covered and has a roof on it. And we saw cats, because all the stations were monitored with cameras, so we saw cats playing in them, easily going in and out. We did initially train them to go in, and the way we trained them is we took their litter pan, their food bowl, and we put it so that it was just inside the side door, and all they had to do was lean their head in to get a bite to eat. And then once we saw they were comfortable doing that, we would move the litter pan to the middle of the trap so that they had to just put their front feet or walk in just a little bit. And then after a day or two of that, we would move the litter pan all the way to the back of the trap. So at that point, we knew they were in far enough to catch them. So what we did at that point was we put the remote control on the side door, and that worked pretty well for about 80 of the last 120 cats. And then we got down to the last 40 or so. The problem was that in order to use the remote control, somebody has to be there, right? Somebody has to see the cat and press the button. The problem with that was the very last cats, and we're talking about, these are the hardest core cats. We're, you know, we had 600 survivors, and now we're down to the last 40 of them. And if they sensed anything different about the environment, especially if there was a human being anywhere within smell or sight, they wouldn't go in. They would just wait it out. And, you know, the trappers were professionals, and they, you know, they had their shifts, and they'd be done. Sometimes they'd stay later until 2-3 in the morning, and then the cats would wait till 4 or 5. We really also, we would study their patterns, of course, on camera and try our best to be there when they usually were, but some of them didn't have patterns. Some of them ate at multiple stations. So it became really difficult at that point to catch them because they weren't there when we were there. And as I say, we were running out of time. We were about 5 months into the rescue project, and they were starting with debris removal. They started removing all the rubble, and more people were coming in. There was a lot of pressure at that point. Our goal was to get every single cat out. There was a lot of pressure to make that happen. So we, you know, necessity being the mother of invention, we figured we have to figure out a way that the drop trap, that the, we can catch the cats in the drop trap without anybody being there. And that's when we came up with this, what we call the auto drop trap. And this is a homemade, you know, contraption that we came up with. But basically what it is, that there's that white plastic you see in the back left of the trap. That's a trip plate. And the gray litter pan in the back right corner is where we would put the bait. And there's a screen going out from the side of the trap that blocks the litter pan. So in order for the cat to get to the bait, they have to step on the trip plate on the way there. They can't go straight to the pan. Once they step on that trip plate, there's a string going through a pulley that runs to the side door. And you see that little piece of wood sticking out? That's holding the side door up. And when the cat steps on the trip plate, it pulls the string attached to that little piece of wood we call the trigger. It pulls it back, and the side door shuts by itself. Now, you can also see we've mounted it on a piece of plywood so that there was no chance of the cat escaping. And one of the reasons for that is some of these traps we had to set overnight. So we want to be really sure that Kitty was there in the morning. But we got back also, you know, just to prevent any type of mishap of them getting under it. It's extremely effective, and the door shuts with amazing speed. And so because the cats were trained to eat inside the drop traps, and because they like being inside them, it's a space they're attracted to, we were able to catch 38 of those last 40 cats in about 2.5 weeks. They just kept going in one after another. But the last two cats, we had to do a little extra training to get them to go all the way into the back. They were like the two super smartest, but we caught them too. And we were able to succeed in getting every single cat that needed to be rescued out of there. So the good news for you guys today is we are debuting how to build one and how to set it and use it. And that's one of the handouts that you can download, which is the auto drop trap instructions. And I just want to caution you, we finished it last night. Nobody's proofread it. So if you see a mistake or you have a question, if you're interested in doing this, then feel free to write to us. And it looks long and complicated, but it really isn't. It's once you put it together, you can quickly take it apart and then reassemble it at another location. And it would take us, Susie and I, it would take us maybe 15 minutes to reassemble, to put the pieces in place. And there's no complicated tools. You don't need to be sophisticated at carpentry or anything like that. It's real basic. So if you're interested in building one of your own, download the plans, give it a shot, and let us know how it goes, because it is kind of new. We're hoping to get it commercially available. You know, we went with the drop trap. Initially, it was kind of a homemade wooden contraption, and eventually it got into commercial production. So whether this will ever get there or not, I don't know. But if you need something like this, it's very good, for example, in a disaster response where you need to get every cat out. You're not doing selective trapping. You want everyone. If you're able to trap in a way that you can hold the cats while you're doing a mass trapping, then you'll be able to catch every cat using this. If there's only one cat at a location who's really tough and won't go into a normal trap and is unpredictable in terms of when they're around for a drop trap, then this would also be a good application.
Are you passionate about making spay-neuter services more accessible? Join us for the 2024 United Spay Alliance online conference on October 12th and 13th, hosted by the Community Cats podcast and the United Spay Alliance. This two-day virtual event brings together animal welfare experts offering presentations on starting low-cost spay-neuter programs, fundraising, community outreach, and more. Learn what's working from professionals and volunteers and get inspired with new strategies to help control the cat population. Register today at communitycatspodcast.com/spayallday and be part of the change.
Embrace your cat addiction with Whisker Tracker. Download the free mobile app that lets you track your cat sightings and helps you manage your cat colonies. You can create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Whisker Tracker is available to download now, with new features being added monthly. Cat facial recognition will allow you to identify cats and help find missing pets. You can track your walks and how many cats you spotted, complete fun cat finding challenges, and climb to the top of the kitty leaderboard. The cats' locations are private for their safety, but you can connect with other caretakers through the cat's profile. When you sign up for a premium subscription using a rescue's referral code, the rescue will get a portion of the monthly revenue. Help support your favorite rescue by taking pictures of cats. With badges, leaderboards, and a community of cat lovers, Whisker Tracker is more than just an app. It's a movement. Get it? It's a movement. Join the cat spotting community and download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization, or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if your whole TNR team was on the same page? Imagine your staff and volunteers mastering trapping best practices, prepping cats properly for clinic arrival, and making everyone's job easier. Would you like to give them a toolbox of tips and tricks to refer to whenever trapping gets tough? Our monthly virtual TNR workshops are perfect for group training, covering everything from TNR philosophy to planning, equipment use, public relations, because we are all going to run into those stubborn neighbors, and cat care tips, plus more. With Q&A sessions, handouts, customized content for your program, your team will be ready to successfully reduce the number of free-roaming cats in your community. Ready to turn your trappers into a team? Great! Email Stacy at communitycatspodcast.com or call 978-239-2090 for details.
Okay, so moving on from the auto drop trap. I've mentioned a couple of times large numbers of cats at once with a drop trap, what we call mass drop trapping. And you can, this is where knowing your cats can come in very handy. If the colony does what we call cluster eating, then this technique is available to you. And what do I mean by cluster eating? There's one big dish and they all gather around and eat together. So a lot of colonies aren't like that. You know, each cat has to have their own bowl or they fight a little bit. But there are colonies of cats where they just, you know, are simpatico that way and they all gather around. So when you see that kind of behavior, once you've done some drop trapping, don't do this your first time out, a light bulb should go off in your head and say, ah, I could do a mass drop trap here. So this is a situation where the cats were cluster eaters, and we've got, what is it, 6 or 7 of them are under the drop trap. Now, obviously, again, you want to have experience because, you know, it's a lot trickier to know when to pull the string. But because they're used to clustering together, a lot of them can be absorbed into eating at the same time, even if they're not right at the dish. Probably wouldn't pull it at this very moment because the cat on the right is looking out. But once he turns his head in towards the bowl and starts to kind of work his way, his head into it, then that would be a good time to drop it. And you can see the drop trap's well on its way to the ground, and they're all still bent over and focused on the food. So we were able to catch 6 of them at the same time. So I want to show you an example of how you can be creative and combine a lot of these techniques that we're talking about, depending on the conditions that you're facing. So this was a situation where a colony of cats lives in a park. And in that park, which is by the ocean, there's a giant pile of concrete rubble. You know, it must have been some building that got knocked down, and then they just left all the concrete into this giant little hill of crevices and openings. So the cats, of course, love it because there's all these nooks and crannies and places to hide. But we wanted to, you know, to get these guys TNR'd. So one of the things they did, you can see the pile of rocks on the right. On the left, you see a fence that separated this section of the park. And the cats were used to eating right by the fence. That's how they'd been trained. So caretakers would come, they would line the fence with food dishes, the cats would come out from the pile and line up against the fence in order to eat. Here's an overhead view of it. So you see how, you know, the ocean and the beach are off on the left there. There's that giant pile of rock and debris. There's the fence right across the way. And there was a gentle slope leading down that would be good as an observation post. How are we going to, you know, drop trap these guys? Also, the ground was uneven to add one more complication to it. And the cats coming out from the pile, going to the feeding area by the fence, that was a pretty predictable pattern. So we had a number of problems, which was we had a lot of very wary cats who ate on uneven ground in this one spot. We had a bad angle, right? Because we couldn't be straight on with the drop traps. We had to be to way to the side. So this is the setup that we used. We put 2 drop trap pads in the feeding area that they were used to going to. We had 2 trappers, meaning one person with a string for each drop trap. And then we put a spotter up on the slope who would yell to the trappers when was the right time to pull the string. In order to get around the problem of the trappers being at a bad angle, because we wanted the front of the drop traps to face the rock pile, that would be the natural direction for the cats. But the trappers are a good 100 feet down a narrow road. So we created this, we call it the Drop Trap 360, which is just a thick wooden dowel wedged into a 10-pound barbell weight, and we wrapped the string around it. So this allowed the trappers to be able to be at a pretty severe angle. And in the end, this is what the setup was. And of course, you know, the cats weren't fed that day. So you can see we caught 8 cats there. After that was done, then we set out box traps all over the place. So this technique was used at the beginning of a mass trapping. And again, it's an example of how you can combine a lot of different things. You've got the drop trap 360, you've got the drop trap pads, we had the cats cluster eating, so we had drop traps. A lot of ways that you can go about getting it. Okay, so before we get to some questions, I just want to mention real quick, anybody who is not taking our TNR certification workshop, we go over basic trapping for TNR, as well as community relations and a little bit on colony care. Now you know how to drop trap, but if you want to know how to use a regular trap and just TNR in general, it's a good class to take. And with that, Kristen, we can take some questions.
The first question I have is, somebody had mentioned that they tried to catch a couple of little ones and they saw her and they ran off and they haven't come back and they don't want to be anywhere near the drop trap, I think because they associate it with her. Do you have any suggestions for how to decouple the people from the trap in the cat's head, I guess?
A lot of it depends on the circumstances, but the first thing I would try, if I could, I would train them to go into the drop trap. So similar to what we did with the cats in the burn zone, have a drop trap out there, take the side door. If you're able to do that, so I mean, it depends on the conditions, but leave a drop trap out there and keep it a good 10 or 15 feet away from where they're used to eating. Get them used to eating with the drop trap in sight. Once they're doing that, then you kind of move the, every few days, you move the food closer until eventually you've trained them to go in. And then when they're eating in the back of the drop trap, at that point, it depends how you train them. If you train them through the side door, you're going to want to, you know, trap them through the side door. But we've trained them with the drop trap propped up on cinder blocks so that we could just use the string and that technique. And then at the time of trapping, you probably want to be hiding in a car. You've even gotten tents for open fields. You know, hunter screens. And hide behind so that they can't see you. So that would be the way that I would go about it. Also, if you can't do that, if you can't train them because it's in a public spot, you can't safely leave a drop trap out, then just try hiding. That's why we like to hang out in the car, because they can't see us.
Yeah. The other thing I might suggest is try varying your bait. So, you know, they may not be willing to get under there for fancy feasts, but they might really be down for rotisserie chicken. If you want to try something smelly or different or interesting, it might entice them to be a little brave and try it out.
Also, you point out, and if you know who's feeding them or if you're the feeder and stuff like that, then get them good and hungry. That'll make the chicken smell even better.
Let's see, powder coating came up several times. Do you suggest powder coating your traps? And in addition to that, what do you do for trap maintenance? How do you keep your traps working well, in good shape from rusting, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think powder coating is a great idea. I know we didn't do that when we were doing the burn zone rescue, and we wish we had, because they were sitting out there, you know, day after day, getting beaten up by the sun and the weather. And I mean, they're still pretty tough pieces of equipment that will last. But if you can afford that extra, whatever it is, $20 or something, it will make the trap last a lot longer. In terms of maintenance, the main thing, you know, have some extra spring clips. They get kind of beat up. If you're using any type of remote control or a side door technique, you want to make sure the tracks are, spray them with WD-40 now and then, make sure the door slides up and down real easy. But in general, disinfect them. Don't let them sit bleach for too long. You know, rescue is better, and then spray them off thoroughly. But they're pretty tough pieces of equipment that even as they get old and beat up, they still work. You know, they're still basically a box falling down.
Not too many moving parts, luckily.
Yeah.
If you're doing a mass trapping, you're trying to catch, you know, a bunch of cats at the same time. Most of the time, it seems like you don't get all of them every single time. How long do you wait for the cats to calm down to set the trap again? So you've got your guys, you've got them all transported out of there. Your trap is empty, ready to go again. Do you go right away or do you wait a few days, or what's your process?
If we're doing a mass trapping, we want to get every single cat, you know, leave at least 2 days to trap. If we're dealing with like 25, 30, 40 cats, we're probably going to leave 3 days. And you need a holding space, obviously, and some time to be able to care for the cats you've trapped. That's something we go over in the certification workshop, how to care for cats while they're in traps. Your first day out is when you're going to catch most of them, right? What we do with a drop trap is normally the protocol would be you'd pack up for the night. When you're not seeing any more action, you'd come back the next day, try again. Well, with the drop trap, if they're not going in by the end of the evening, but they're hanging around, then we'll break out the drop trap. You know, we'll have put out our box traps because they're the easiest way if the cat just walks in themselves and right. Yeah. But if they're still around and they're interested, but they just won't go into a box trap, that's a good time. And we've often gotten the last one or two cats the same night.
Wow.
But if you do have to come back, you want to keep withholding food, leave water out, but keep withholding food for the entire time and continue to put traps out as long as the other cats are away. So
Okay. Let's
say spay neuter day is Monday and you start trapping on Saturday. So you trap Saturday, you trap Sunday. You get to Monday, there's still one or two left. Keep putting traps out, even though it's spay neuter day. Keep putting traps out the next day, even though the cats are recovering. Because the problems you're going to have trying to get the one or two cats fixed, if you catch them, is a lot easier problem to solve than the one or two cats that you now have to pick out of the 20 once they've all come back. Now, once you are through that cycle, then you probably want to wait a few weeks and let everybody get back to their routine and everything's normal before you try again.
Excellent. Let's see. I got two more quick questions. Oh, do you recommend trappers get a rabies vaccine? The people, not the cats.
You know, I've never gotten, and nobody at Neighborhood Cats ever got rabies vaccines, and that's because we don't get bit. We don't get scratched. if you have proper technique, now that's a lot different from a shelter worker who's interacting with them and in a very different way. But if you're doing TNR, if you're primarily, that's your thing, you should never be exposing yourself to the potential of a bite. You know, you're never touching cats. They're always in traps. So not that it doesn't happen once in a blue moon. So if you're really worried about that and you're in an area where there's a lot of rabies, then there's nothing wrong with it. But in general, we rely more on our protocols and our handling techniques than vaccinations.
Excellent. Excellent. I can tell you, I got mine because I am in a shelter and it's a 3-part series. You usually have to go to a travel vaccine clinic rather than like your regular doctors to get it done. It's a little bit of a process if you want to do it. It also, it's one of those ones that kind of hurts. So, you know, if you can avoid it, it's also, you can treat rabies as long as you don't wait. I am under the impression that if you get bit, go to the doctor right away because they'll be able to give you shots at that point that will help you fight it off.
That's a good point.
That's not to get bit in the first place.
Yes, the rabies virus, once it enters, if you do get bit and the virus enters your body, depending on where you got bit, it's going to take a certain amount of time for it to travel through your nervous system to your brain. And there is an opportunity in the beginning to kill it off. So, but I'm not sure how long that window of opportunity is. So yeah, if you get bit in any way, breaks your skin and the cat, if the cat's around, you want to hold on to the cat for 10 days, because if he's alive in 10 days, you did not, even if he has the virus, he didn't pass it to you. He wasn't contagious. Yeah. If they're contagious when you're bit, they'll be dead within 10 days. So never let a cat go.
I don't think you should wait those 10 days, though. Go right to the doctor anyway, because cat bites can go bad real fast.
There are other things you can get besides rabies so definitely go to the doctor, but you can probably hold off on the vaccination. But I don't have any, I mean, I'm not anti-vaccine or anything like that. I think, you know, if you feel it, you need it for your protection, then by all means.
Yeah, it can't hurt. I'm going to ask you one more question and then I'm going to close it out. But I do know Susie gets all of these questions via email and she is fastidious about answering. So if you guys have a question, don't worry. Your answers are coming. But the last question I'm going to ask is that these folks are working on TNR projects with about 4 colonies, and one of the caretakers has passed away. They're working on TNRing, but how do you handle handing off care of a colony, or how do you find a new caretaker? I know you guys were dealing with this not too long ago, so I thought, even though this is more of a colony question than a drug trap question, it might be worth asking.
Sure. Well, you know, there's no magic solution. It's hard work. It's walking around the neighborhood. It's finding out, are there neighbors? Often cats are fed by more than one person. So is there somebody willing to take over the feeding? We've found that if you subsidize the food, the expense of it, that helps. We'll tap into our network, send out an email asking for people to help. So providing food helps. It also helps if you're not shifting all the responsibility onto someone else. So you're not saying, here's a colony of 10 cats. We need you to feed them 7 days a week. You have to pay for everything yourself. If you say, we'll provide food, and you can do one shift a week or 2 shifts a week, and you start to cobble together something like that. It's that kind of hard work, pounding the pavement and asking and trying to make it easier for people. You're more likely to find volunteers.
Excellent. That is very good advice. All right. We really appreciate Brian and Susie, both of you sharing with us all of the information that you have such big brains with so much in them. We're so glad that we have an opportunity to pick them.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.